Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:19 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 17th. I thought we'd kick off today with the pound. It pulled back by about 2 cents against the dollar. We can see, though, that it has clearly broken the downtrend over the last couple of years. Now the big question is, how much of this gain is it going to hold? And I suspect it's going to hold on to at least two-thirds of it, but what would be the clearest bullish signal is if it can hold onto the 130 area. That's the upper side of the underlying range. On the other hand, I think when we think about the volatility we've seen in the in this cross rate, then generally when we've had such a lot of movement, the big arbiter would be the extent to which it can successfully put in a higher major reaction low. We've certainly had higher lows off the low in September, but we need to see that it can successfully navigate this period of volatility in the aftermath of the election result. I think the outlook for the pound against the euro is perhaps more important. It also pulled back in a dynamic manner in here today. Now, when we look at this on a weekly basis, well, we can see that it did get up to a new recovery high, the highest level that it had seen since 2016. But the downward dynamic that we saw in here today, that risks suggesting that we're getting a failed upside break. Quite how much of the recent impressive advance it is going to hold during this period of consolidation is going to give us some, I think, useful information as to whether the base formation has been completed and we're getting the formation of the first consolidation following the breakout, or whether we are likely to see this long range persist in a volatile trading manner for at least another year. I think the likelihood of a hard Brexit is rather remote, but I think the argument that we are probably in for a slow Brexit, in other words, the negotiations between the UK and the EU are probably going to be something akin to the negotiations between China and the USA, that by the time we get around to December of next year, there will probably be a bare bones framework agreed, and then they will resolve to sort out everything else over subsequent years. Between now and then, there is going to be a great deal of brinksmanship, and the threat of a hard Brexit will certainly rear its head. And what that suggests is a recipe for some volatility. It might be coming in a little bit quicker than investors had been prepared for, but any delay in the continued advance of the pound is positive for the stock market, provided investors continue to believe that we are on the cusp of a more conclusive solution to this problem that began 3 years ago. The FTSE 250 is short-term overbought. It is looking increasingly likely that we're going to see at least some consolidation of that move. But I don't think we're probably going to have more than that. It's more likely than not that the short-term overbought condition will be unwound and we'll see additional upside from here. Then when we look at what's going on in Europe, well, it was also a negative day, but certainly not in a dynamic manner, and we have had a very impressive advance over the course of the last month. The Euro Stoxx index is right in the region of its peak from back in 2018, but it's been really range-bound with a very mild upward bias since 2015. And when we look at that over the longer term, well, we can clearly see then that there is clear potential that this almost 5-year range is being resolved on the upside, despite the short-term risk of some consolidation, and that we are going to see it pushing higher from here and at least going back up to test the peaks put in 2000 and again in 2007. When we add back in the UK Sweden, Norway, and Denmark. Then the index has broken higher, but it was off its highs in here today. Now I think the big question is, how much of this move above 400 is it going to hold? I rather suspect that we're going to see it hold the majority of this advance, but it does also, I think, hold out the prospect that we are going to be in for a bit of ranging over the course of the next couple of months, just to unwind the overbought condition. But the bigger picture is that central banks are in, I think, a festive spirit, and they are loosening the purse strings. The repo auction that the Federal Reserve has planned for the end of the year is already oversubscribed. The ECB is back engaged in quantitative easing. Arguably, the Federal Reserve is also engaged in quantitative easing, regardless of what they're calling this repo action. Governments the world over are spending more money than they're taking in, so we have fiscal stimulus, which is the rather kind term for deficit spending. Well, that's all supportive of growth. Now the question is, what exactly is China doing? So far, they have demurred from supplying liquidity, but they are benefiting from sentiment improving with regard to global trade. The A-share index is back testing the 3,200 point level, and this has been an area of resistance for most of the year. I think the bigger picture, though, is that it has continued to find support around the 3,000 level, and this is, I think, an important level that we have clear evidence of support coming through in that. And this is, of course, a highly manipulated market, so that is a round number that the authorities appear to be supporting. There have been a number of news stories about the interrelationship between various bond issuers, particularly in some of the regions. And when one goes down, it tends to take a few more with it. That's particularly true of Shandong province. But the banking sector, which is heavily dominated by the state-owned banks, is back in the region of the peaks from 2015 and in 2018, and it is firming from the region of the trend mean. So that also is supportive of the view that we are seeing overt support coming through from the central government. When we then think about what's going on in terms of Hong Kong, then reporting on the protest movement has, I think, largely disappeared. It's just not making news anymore, but that doesn't mean it's ended. But the H-share index is back testing the 11,000 level. The fact of the matter is that the news cycle has moved on, and now we're talking more about Brexit, looking more at the trade war, looking at the impeachment in Washington, D.C., rather than concentrating on the protest movement in China. There obviously is still an intransigent problem there that has not really been addressed, but the attention span of the global investor has moved on, and a crisis needs to be seen to be getting worse in order to continue to have a deleterious effect on prices, and it doesn't look like it's getting worse immediately. Well, as long as the sequence of higher reaction lows over the last 6 months continues to hold, we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to continued upside. Then, when we look at what's going on in terms of the industrial commodities, copper has continued to hold this move above the trend mean. It has bounced from the $2.50 area. What we are also seeing is that a number of the copper miners are also starting to do better. Southern Copper broke its downtrend back in October. Rio Tinto has been trending higher for most of the last 4 years and is back above its trend mean now for the first time in about 6 months. And Rio has made a very clear attempt to try and put or draw a line under its polluting history and saying that it is producing metals for the future and concentrating on things like copper, aluminium, and nickel. The nickel price had pulled back really very aggressively and is now offering at least the first signs of support coming through in the region of the trend mean. Now, when we look at the LME Metals Index, it is pushing back up towards the upper side of this six-month range and testing the region of the trend mean. The Continuous Commodity Index, which is unweighted, has broken higher and clearly broken its downtrend over the last 18 months. The Baltic Dry Index has popped on the upside, then came back to test the region of the trend mean. It pulled back violently last week, and this does tend to be a rather volatile price series, but it is still in the region of the trend mean, and it needs to push back above the $1,500 area to really suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Of course, the 2020 or the IMO 2020 rules come into effect on the 1st of January, and I think the anticipation of that was probably one of the factors in the pop on the upside that we saw from the beginning of this year through to the middle of the year. The other rather interesting charts that we're seeing right now are in the cryptocurrency markets. Bitcoin was down another almost $300 in here today. It's a new reaction low. It's encountered resistance at $1,000 increments ever since June of this year. That changed somewhat in November. It could have encountered resistance around 9,000. Instead, it encountered resistance around 8,000. Now the question is, what is driving this decline? It's potentially the unwinding of some positions following a Ponzi scheme. The weakness that we're seeing, not just in the Bitcoin price, but also in the Ethereum price and in the Ripple price, well, that is all supportive of the view that there is certainly an exodus going on from the sector generally. But we are approaching the halving in July of next year. And if this is indicative of forced selling, where the pace of the decline is picking up, then we don't have any evidence yet that it's over. But generally, a halving represents a focusing of minds around these limited supply argument. And there is the potential that that will happen again in 2020. And therefore, we are probably being set up for the next attractive buying opportunity, but we're not there yet. So I do think that the downtrends are still in evidence and there is potential for additional weakness in this market, but that when we do see support coming through, then that is likely to be a signal to potentially, signal that there is the scope for a recovery heading into that halving next year. When we then think about the government bond markets, 10-year yields have just about unwound their overbought condition relative to the trend mean. The big question, and there is a rather clear debate going on, is whether this is simply an unwinding of the overbought condition prior to additional highs and a sustained move through the 1.5% level, or is this a similar period of resistance around the 1.5% level, similar to what we saw in 2016 and 2012, and that we're more likely to see the yield go back up towards the 3% area. When we then think about the copper-gold ratio, well, what it has usually been looked upon as a lead indicator for what treasuries do, that's certainly been the view of Jeff Gundlach. It is now bouncing from the 2016 lows. This is also the region of the lows put in back in 2009. There have been an incremental sequence of higher reaction lows. if it can push back above the trend mean, well, then that will hold out the prospect of us pushing all the way back up towards the upper side of the range. Think it's unlikely that we're going to see a lot of weakness coming through in the bond markets unless we get inflation. But with commodity prices starting to recover, with the fact that central banks the world over are printing money and governments are spending money like drunken sailors, well, then there is the potential that that is going to create an inflationary issue. That's, of course, occurring against a background where we're at record low unemployment and in a number of countries. And that capacity utilization has increased substantially over the last decade. If we do get inflation starting to pick up, then that is highly supportive of the view that we are in the latter stages of a major bull market. But I think inflation has disappointed on so many occasions that in order to really confirm that we are coming to the end of this incredible bull market in terms of treasuries that has been underway now for nearly 40 years, well, we would at least have to see the total return index break its uptrend. Well, when we look at the hiatus that's been underway for most of the last 3 months, well, we might argue that it was overbought and there was a clear potential that we're going to see at least some pause in consolidation. It has just about unwound all of its overextension relative to the trend mean. Now, if it sustains a move below the trend mean, well, then at least that will suggest that there is scope for it to come back down and have a somewhat deeper reaction. But the other side of that argument is that this is a potential area of support. So I think what we can anticipate from the bond markets is some rather interesting trading over the course of the next few months. And of course, that is going to have an influence on what happens with the gold price. Gold has been holding around this $1,450 area now for the last 6 weeks, and it remains really quite steady. Silver prices have been rather firmer over the course of just the last week, but over the last 6 weeks have also been range bound as it kind of pauses around the $17 area and is just above the region of the trend mean. Platinum prices have been popping back on the upside, but it still hasn't quite broken its sequence of lower rally highs. But I think if it can push back above the $1,000 area, we'll have clear confirmation that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. There were headlines today that palladium prices had got right up to test the psychological $2,000 area. That was only on the spot price. It did not occur in the futures. But we did see a little pause coming in here, considering that it has been up on consecutive days. And people are now starting to make the argument that the price can't come back down, that the cost of palladium is inconsequential relative to the total cost of a catalytic converter, and that there is no real incentive to substitute, and that there is clear potential for the price to move significantly higher from here. I'm rather skeptical of these arguments against a background where demand for automotive vehicles has been trending downwards all year. The price of palladium has been doing nothing but trend higher. And we do have a rather wide overextension relative to the trend mean. It rather suggests that we could have some pause in consolidation at least coming through in here. A sustained move below the trend mean would, I think, signal that we have seen a peak of more than short-term significance, but at least some pause in consolidation around the psychological big $2,000 area is likely. Palladium prices today are higher than the price of gold ever got, and that is a rather odd set of circumstances. Now, when we look a little wider, the Nifty index in India was at a new high in here today and appears to be now pulling away from the 12,000 area. There has obviously been a clear upward bias to trading over the last 2 years, but the pace of the advance has been rather modest. I think there is scope here for bulls to start turning up in India for the simple reason that the slowing economy and the fears about disappointing the voters that gave a majority to the Modi government, well, what that suggests that there is potential here that the reforms that have been announced are going to start to pay dividends, and those are likely to be medium-term in nature. What it also therefore suggests is that the potential for surprises on the upside in India outweighs, I think, the short-term bearish considerations from the uptick in social unrest as a result of the anti-Muslim immigration laws, and also the rise generally in Hindu nationalism. Then when we look at South Korea, the index was up in a rather dynamic manner in here today. It is now firming from the region of the trend mean. It had been trending downwards for most of the last 2 years, and it has now clearly broken that downtrend. Samsung Electronics is leading on the upside and has very clearly now bounced from the upper side of that underlying trading range and pushed on to a new recovery high in here today. When we then think about the resurgence in demand for Taiwan, its Taiwan Semiconductor continues to surprise on the upside, having gone from 45 to 60 in approximately the last 10 weeks. There is obviously a clear overbought condition, but it doesn't appear to have ended just yet. And then when we think about the very significant move that we've had in coffee prices over the course of the last week, we're starting to see volatility come in here. We've had both upward dynamics and downward dynamics. This is supportive of the view that this is a softening up process and that we are now going to see some consolidation coming through. We have plenty of evidence of these incredible moves in coffee that do occur from time to time. But it is when the downward dynamics start to creep in that it suggests that we are in a period where supply and demand are coming back into balance, and that does now appear to be occurring in the coffee price. When we think about what's going on in the wider markets, the S&P 500 was in mildly positive territory in here today, but was off its high. The Dow Jones wasn't quite able to hold on to all of its gain in here, and potentially it is being weighed down by its largest constituent, which is Boeing. Boeing was a little steadier in here today at the lower side of its range, but this does not look like a bullish chart. Following the acceleration in 2017, we have now got ranging time and size, and this looks like a Type 3 top formation. It's going to have to at least break above the $400 level in order to really check the very real potential that this is not going to end well. When we then think about the NASDAQ, it's obviously being led higher by some of its largest constituents. And then we have the continued outperformance of the SOX index, and that was at another new high in here today and continues to extend its breakout. The transportation index has been largely range-bound now for 2 years. It is at least steadying in the region of the upper side of that range, but hasn't quite yet been able to break successfully higher. When we think about the various constituents of that index, it's the airlines are tending to be share the pattern that the transportation index has been putting in. But FedEx just released their earnings and disappointed. And in after hours trading, the stock was down about 5%. So that still looks like a downtrend, and it's a 2-year downtrend, probably with additional room for a testing of underlying trading in here. Well, that definitely suggests that the transportation index is at least rotating. Berkshire Hathaway, on the other hand, has been pushing on the upside. The Russell 2000 has also been pushing on the upside and is now firming from the 1600 point level, which is very supportive of the bullish environment generally. And the banking sector is also looking positive here and has pushed on to new recovery highs. I think it is really worth looking at where the index traded before the last crisis. And if anyone had told investors that it would be back at its peak within a decade, within 12 years, nobody would have believed us back in 2009. Of course, we've had a significant rotation in terms of the performers within the index, but certainly we've had some stellar performers within the sector as well. I think we are at a rather interesting point in stock markets. We've had these very impressive breakouts. We're seeing a number of the things that people have been worried about for the last couple of years reaching at least partial resolutions, and central banks the world over are printing money, and governments are following suit. This flood of liquidity is likely to lead to additional upside in 2020, and the majority of the 2020 forecasts I've seen over the last few weeks are rather modest in terms of their ambition, and I think that is rather positive for the outlook for markets generally. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.